And I said, I'm going to do something that's crazy. And if you can name the movie, I give you 30 seconds. It's a kid movie. I'm going to do this thing. And if you get two guesses. And if you guess it right in 30 seconds, we'll buy a puppy. And the girl's like, what is it? And I looked at my shirt and went, Truffle Shuffle, Truffle Shuffle. And Gina's like,
Oh, come on. That's an easy one.
And I was like, Gina, you know the movie. She's like, I don't know. And I was like, you've seen this. You've seen this 1,000 times. I don't know. The Mighty Ducks? What's the name of the movie?
It was The Goonies.
There you go. This is why we're the movie guys.
Hello, and thank you very much for downloading this most recent episode of Movie Guys Podcast. You can download many more episodes at movieguyspodcast.podbean.com.
Do I do a warning? Do I say to the audience, like, this is going to be an X-rated show?
It's almost an X-rated movie. We're all recording right now, but...
Okay. Eric and I don't go off the rails too much, but if you have sensitive ears, a little warning, this episode is for adults. It's because this movie is for adults. We're talking about Poor Things. Eric, how the hell are you doing?
I'm excited to talk about this, only to bash it. Now, usually you show your hand early. Right. I will do you the favor and show my hand early and say that I hated this movie. I hated this movie so much that I had to go online and try to validate, like, am I alone? I must have missed something. I must have missed something because everyone that I'm trying to be cathartic in this and go online and try to see if anyone else is feeling the same way. Not too many people. There are many, don't get me wrong. But it seemed like the majority of people are praising this. People calling it movie of the decade. It's a masterpiece. And giving this such praise. And I'm disgusted with these reviews. Because I don't know where they get this from.
The decade?
There's so much praise for this movie. It's gotten high reviews. It's won Academy Awards, obviously. And by the way, this is Emma Stone's second win for actress. Her first one being, can you remember, 2017? Which also an undeserving movie.
I was going to say Easy A, but not that, huh?
La La Land.
Oh, she did. All she did was dance. Okay.
Well, all she did was dance on this one, or furiously jump, I think is what she described it in this one, right?
Yes. Yes, we did tell the audience this is an explicit episode. So, again, if you don't want to listen, we're going to go off. We're just giving you a warning. We don't do this.
But again, I went down. I spent a lot of time reading, listening, and thinking what I missed here.
Right.
And I don't think it's much. Plain and simply, this movie is just not for me. I don't think this movie was trying to be any sort of metaphor. I don't think it was trying to be anything but satirical. I think it's a very shallow movie in its theme. And I was trying to think the best way to put this. Do you remember when the Beatles came out with I Am the Walrus? And there were people... Yeah, and there are people really trying to dig down and be like, oh, well, what does it mean? Paul's the walrus, and no, Paul's the Eggman, and John's the walrus, and just all this whole thing, and really trying to dig down. The Beatles were just like, well, we just wrote a dumbass song that we were high on, and it doesn't mean anything. That's what I feel this movie is for those people who are just like, oh, this movie's supposed to mean something deep, and it means this, and an empowerment of femininity, and this. It's like, no, it doesn't. Look at the surface value of it. This is a joke about what it means to be normal. It is an absurd movie. It is a ridiculous movie, and I think that's all it's supposed to be.
I don't think so. I literally think that the director himself, this French auteur, sat there violently masturbating, thinking that he's making a masterpiece. I'm being honest with you. Like, I really think so, because I think everybody that's in this movie, Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, good actors, right? Mark Ruffalo. Like, I think they drank the French man's juice. I think they think this guy's great. What, didn't you tell me off air this is Emma Stone's third film with this guy?
Third project. She also did The Favorite with him, and I think she did a short with him as well, too.
So she loves him, right? You remember when her BFF, Jennifer Lawrence, went a little crazy when she did Mother with Darren Aronofsky and she dated him for like a month?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she quickly realized, I'm going to get crazy. I'm going to go away from that. Yes. Emma Stone hasn't gotten that dose of reality yet. See, you're too nice, and you have a filter, and I'm going to try to filter myself. But this director is such artistic douchebaggery. Like this is the guy that was who every single guy I was in film school was.
I agree. Absolutely. You know what I mean? He makes high art films.
Right. And I'm the one guy in class saying, why did you have random angles of fisheye lenses?
Yeah.
Because it's art. Okay, well, Jackass did that. I mean, is that art? you know? So
no, I get it. This movie is for the Ryans of the world here.
Wow, you went there. I wasn't going to go there, but okay, yeah.
It's obviously what it is, where I can just see we're in a group, we're in a room, and we're talking about how we didn't like this movie, and there's going to be that one person just like, oh, you just didn't understand it. So, no, I feel like I got a pretty good grasp on what the movie is, because, again, I don't think it's trying to be anything layered. I don't think it's trying to tell this deep inner personal story. I think it's just flat out supposed to be dumb. I don't mean that in like stupid dumb, but I mean supposed to be making fun maybe of the social norms of the world. And that's really what I think it is. I don't think it's supposed to be anything more than that.
Well, I mean, that we will disagree on.
The movie. It's like, no, you want this movie to be different, and you, because you want to be different because you're so boring in your damn life. All right, see, I'm getting...
Yeah, see, we warn people. But see, no, but this is where I'm going to disagree with you. I mean, like, I don't think this movie's dumb, meaning that this movie doesn't mean anything, right? Like, I feel that this movie is trying to say something because I feel that the people that are behind the movie think that they're clever enough and they're trying to say something.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I really, really think that this director thinks he's making, like, Schindler's List or Goodfellas. You know what I mean? Like, I think this guy thinks he's making something. And evidently Emma Stone thinks this guy's great because she's done three projects with him. Willem Dafoe goes full Jigsaw makeup with this guy and burps gastro bubbles. And yep. Mark Ruffalo gets completely naked in this movie and goes for it. Marvel's out of his future, right? He's doing this now.
Publicly thanked the director for having him do this movie because he felt like he was being typecasted into the depressed dad role, and this let him explore his creativity as an actor.
What I'm saying? So it's artistic douchebaggery.
Yes.
See what I'm saying? Like, come on. What actor or actress has publicly come out and thanked the director for putting him in the movie? Do you think Sigourney Weaver says that to James Cameron? I mean, come on. Like, stop it. You know, like, I mean, like, do you think that Richard Dreyfuss says that to Spielberg for Jaws? No. Like, it's ridiculous. It's a job.
Yeah. And I don't think this was anything challenging for Mark Ruffalo. I think he just basically played Ben Stiller for about an hour in the movie, where he just plays this calm, collected guy until he freaks out, man, and gets really, I can't believe you're doing this to me. That's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with you. But
you're pushing me over the edge, and I'm just can't take it anymore. Sorry. It's fine.
I want this to happen because I knew this was going to be fun. We're not going to break down every little scene like we traditionally do, you know.
Because half the movie's porn, Jordan.
Half? I'm going to say, like, okay, like 60, 70, but okay. Like, I was shocked. So this movie follows Willem Dafoe, Dr. Frankenstein, and he has a messed up past where his dad would just maliciously abuse him physically because his dad was a mad scientist, I'm assuming, right? So Willem Dafoe grows up and becomes this professor, and he's teaching, you know, the old school surgery classes, right? Where they're in this little stadium seating, right? Blah, blah, blah. And they have all the students see. Yeah. So that's his story. And this random woman who is pregnant jumps off of the bridge to kill herself into the water. Willem Dafoe finds her. Don't know how he finds her. Don't know how he knew that a woman was washing up. It didn't even say that he was out for a stroll, right? Finds this woman, finds out she's pregnant, has the idea to cut her brain out, take the infant out of the womb, take the infant's brain, which is smaller than a grown human's head. Mm. So how is it not going to jingle jangle in there? And puts the baby's brain into the full-grown woman's body.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Okay, fine. That's fine. Hey, we've seen Frankenstein. That's okay. We can deal with this, right? That's fine.
Sure.
That's the mulligan.
Okay, yeah.
And then Willem Dafoe finds this guy who just thinks he's wonderful, thinks he's great, finds this student. Igor is what I'm going to call him.
His name is Max.
His name's Igor.
Played by Rami Yosef.
And within, what, 15 minutes of the movie? Maybe 20 minutes of the movie? Like, Emma Stone is walking. Okay, nobody can see me, of course, but she's walking, you know, kind of like this. You know, like, that's her acting like she's 2 years old. Yeah. Right? She can't really. She kind of, like, walked with her feet straight, right? And within 15 minutes of the movie, Igor says to Willem Dafoe, I'm in love with her. I'm going to marry her. Or something like that. I'm like, really?
Yeah. I thought Willem Dafoe brought up to him first. He's like, I think you two should get married. You love her, don't you? I see the way that you two look at each other, that you look at her. And
sure, but I'm
It's on the table.
Right, it's on the table. I'm just like, that's weird. And a lot of this podcast, that's why we're saying it's explicit, revolves around sex, because they take her out and it's a black and white movie and then eventually turns color. I'm gonna bring that up right now. So this movie is like the first half an hour is black and white and the rest of it's color. And I Googled, why did the director do this? And the choice was because her world was black and white because she was small and she was innocent and her world was small. So because of that, when everything became color, her world was big and her world was bright.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they take her out to a
deep
park.
Deep,
right? They take her out to a park. She wants to be with people, a la Frankenstein's monster. Chloroform her. And as Igor takes her upstairs, her breast falls out of her dress. And the camera really focuses on that. And I'm like, oh, this ain't going to be good. Something's going to happen. And the next shot, she masturbates.
Yep.
Because, let's dive deep, right? Because she's no longer five. She's somehow 13, 15, and she's discovered her body and womanhood, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and this is really where I have to argue with a lot of people who are talking about this being some sort of feminist, like, empowering movie, because no part in this movie does she face any consequence for any of her action. No part in this movie does she really choose anything for herself. It's often decided for her, more often by a man, by the way, too. Except for the one time where it's a woman in Paris, who still also does it for sexual gratification somewhat, and then for her exploitation as well, too. And for her to be like, oh, it's sexually empowering. It's like, no, it's not, because in the other half of the movie, when she's in Paris becoming a prostitute, she has to do the things that she doesn't want to do. She's succumbing to the John who's coming in and forcing her to do things that she doesn't want to do. How was that empowering? There's so many different parts of this movie where I feel like the pretentious student in film school that you probably went to school with and saying like, oh, well, it's like it could easily be countered by saying, no, not in this part of the movie. It's for the most part of it. She is taken advantage of. She is naive in almost everything that she does. If you're saying that, oh, well, she learns. It's like, no, she doesn't. She learns about poor people, and she instantly goes to give them money and then gets grifted. She can stay. She doesn't learn a damn thing in this movie. The only thing that she learns is how to copy her dad's work, I guess. God. The same, yeah. Godwin apparently, but yeah, God's work in this, and that's another man that's already done all the work, and she's just copying his notebook. It does the opposite of that, and I'm really trying to find the humor in this movie because a lot of people are saying that they were laughing. This movie is considered to be a comedy sci-fi.
Comedy sci-fi. What, because her body's reanimated? That's what makes it sci-fi?
I don't know what is.
This
about.
Is not sci-fi.
I'm trying to find the comedy of it. This is where I think it's the satire of it, just because they make many comments and notions about society and about how to be polite in this world and how to act and how to behave and how she is treated as an oddity because she does not act or behave that way. And I think people are laughing at her behavior because, it's so absurd and ridiculous. It's like, that's, I understand that, but that's not what's funny to me. Sure, and that's funny to you, that's fine. And again, I compared it to Hail Caesar when I watched that goddamn movie in the middle of theaters, and it was a packed house, and in the opening part of that movie, you have Josh Brolin slapping a woman across the face multiple times in a house, and there was that one guy in the back who was dying laughing, hunched over, cracking up so hard, and it's like, that's funny to you? This is funny. Right. He's like, oh, because he's not supposed to do that. It's like, right, what? That's, is that funny to you? Like, that's not a, anyway, go ahead.
I don't understand it. And I don't know if you're in my wheelhouse with this or if the audience is listening, but are you sick and tired of critics and the Academy and just people in general that feel that because a movie has a female lead, and she's hypersexualized, that it's for feminism? I mean, I find that very annoying. Listen, right?
Yeah, I've been losing faith in the Academy for years, as have a lot of people, just in their choices for nominations and their winners. This movie really took a nosedive for me in the fact that it's won all these awards and that Emma Stone won for Best Actress on this, when she basically Forrest Gumped her way into this shit. It's just like, really? Natalie Portman did a better job of playing quirky in Garden State than you ever did in this movie, Emma Stone. Which, dude, I know she's in the show, reference. Of course. She's a fan of the show.
Great reference. Yes, yes. Yes, wow. Great reference. I gotta watch that movie again. No, I just find it annoying, right? Because, like, we reviewed a movie this year that had more female power, if you will, than anything recently, and that's Thelma Louise, right? I mean, that wasn't hypersexualized.
I would say the Marvels is more empowering than this movie.
Sure. I just find it annoying, right? And then I'm going to say my piece and move on. I just find it annoying that Critics Academy and people feel that a movie like this, where a woman is one with her womanhood, her femininity, and uses her body, that's just great for female kind. No, you are just taking a step back again. You know what I mean? Like, Because the men that see this movie, the young men, because we're not that young anymore, we're gonna sit there and go, oh, this is what they like. This is what women like, right? This is what I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
This adds nothing to it, right? Mark Ruffalo's this rich playboy guy who doesn't deserve her at all. She's already engaged to be married, and he straight up steals her from Igor and God and says, yep, she's going to come in court with me for a while. She's still going to be engaged with you, but she's going to sow her wild oats and live the fancy life. That's exactly what happens.
Yeah, he basically just wants a sex toy for whatever trip he's going on, and he gets it. And then he gets pissed when his sex toy starts to become fembot starts becoming a self-aware a bit more of what's going on and curious of the world, and he has to take her out into society and realizes, like, oh, I can't introduce you, everyone, as my sex toy. You have to you know, have to be a lady in the streets sometimes, and also a freak in the sheets.
Mm-hmm.
To quote, what was it, a monk, I think, Little John, the poet.
I just find it annoying, like, and I don't want to sit here and, like, have this whole episode about sex, but that's literally what this movie is.
What the movie is.
Nothing happens. Like, I mean, the story's bland. Also, some things that I thought that was going to happen that didn't happen, right? So, Mark Ruffalo straight up just is like, hey, you're going with me. And she's like, okay, you know, I'm naive. And she does that. She does the whole bedroom stuff. And then there's a couple scenes later where she's like out eating sweets and she's by herself and she just throws up randomly.
Yeah, she overeats.
Right. But I thought, oh, you know, this is Victorian London. There's consequences for these actions. No.
Nothing.
Nothing. It would be nice if the movie was clever enough to say she can't reproduce because he made sure to take her womb out or something. I don't know, because not once. If you're going to have a movie this hypersexualized about a woman, about a young woman discovering her femininity, why isn't menstruation brought up? Why isn't this kind of stuff brought up? None of those things are questioned. None of those things happen.
Yeah.
So is she even a
lot is left open in that. You're right.
It doesn't make sense. And I can't believe I'm having this conversation with you about this, my administration. But the stuff that I'm thinking about, because this movie is begging to dive deeper than what this movie has given us. Like, go deeper with this.
And that's why I have to call this movie shallow in a lot of its themes, because it refuses to ask those questions and just gives you that little piece and then move on to the next part of it in a walleye lens. And I don't know, again, I'm trying to find, just like you said, dig deep to try to find if there's any other meaning to it other than what we get at face value. And there's just not, because they don't really tell that story. They don't tell that story at all. There's little to no development in any of these characters. Mm-hmm. We've already touched on the fact there's no consequence to anything. Mm-hmm. None of these characters really learn a whole lot about anything. I would say maybe the only part is at the end when she meets the general, but we can talk about that a little bit later. And it's almost insulting how that confrontation happens with him literally shooting himself in the foot, trying to challenge her independence. And that's why I was just like, geez, they really are not putting anything deep into this. Everything here is on the surface. It is shallow. I keep on repeating myself for these words because I'm running out of similes to use here. But that's really what it is. And this is why I didn't like the movie. I wanted something with more substance. This is just frosting on the cake, and I didn't get any cake. I just got the lick frosting.
Right, which is sugary and sweet, but it's not good for you. And it's like, for a movie to have these many awards and to have best actress, not supporting, like just straight up best actress. Like, okay, something has to be in this that we're not seeing, right? But I tell you what drove me absolutely nuts is Bella. She keeps on referring to herself, Bella don't like that or you know, stuff like that, right? But she starts to get a little testy with Mark Ruffalo, right? She gets a little testy with him, right? And he says, hey, climb into this trunk. I have a surprise for you. And she's like, okay. She gets in the trunk. He opens the trunk, and she's on a three-week cruise? Random three-week cruise.
It's like a week-long or like something like that cruise?
Yeah.
Either way, it's an extended cruise.
This whole cruise part, from the time he opened the trunk until the time they got dropped off, I wanted to gouge my eyes out. Like, this is the worst part of the movie. And this is half the movie.
Yeah.
Like, nothing happens. Like, they're on a cruise. They do their bedroom stuff. She meets an old woman and a black guy. And they start showing her the world more. And she's starting to think, and how dare women think. And then she gives all of Mark Ruffalo's money away because she's supposed to be naive. And they're like, hey, you have no more money, so we're going to drop you off the nearest port. Like, I just described 30 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah. What the hell is Gerard Carmichael doing here?
Who's that?
He was the black guy on the boat.
Is this guy supposed to be somebody?
He's a comedian and a writer and a producer. He's done a lot of things.
Have I seen him in something?
You most certainly have not. You've seen him in this movie.
Okay. Well, I'm never going to see him again. This guy's terrible.
He had his own show called The Carmichael Show, which wasn't anything. Again, he's I don't know, he's just a kind of a generational favorite. He's just a performer. I don't mind his one-man shows because they're more that than his comedy specials. They're definitely
a generational favorite. You mean our generation?
No, he is definitely, even though he's our age, I think that he appeals more to like the Gen Z crowd. Like, he's friends with like Bo Burnham. You know, they're the witty kind of type of comedy, or what's a good way of putting it?
Bo Burnham, he likes the pizzazz.
They're the intellectual creatives.
Sure, douchebags. Gotcha.
There you go.
Right? I mean, like, I never want to see this guy again. This guy sucks. And there was a lot of metaphors here on this one for me. Or is it just me, right? Because I just got done seeing, like, I don't know how many minutes of porn that I did not sign up for. And all of a sudden, this old white woman and this black guy's teaching Emma Stone all about life. But they're not really, right? This is about swingers, right?
They're cynics, where at least he is a cynic. I think this is, again, I'm taking, after looking into it and trying to reevaluate everything at surface, these two characters, you had one person who has a life to live, the old lady, and she's talking about how at certain stages in the life that she's in, she prioritizes one thing over the other. She doesn't prioritize what's between her legs or what's between other people's legs. She prioritizes what's in between their ears, the mind. She likes intellectual conversation that encourages Bella to maybe exercise that a bit more, that she's stuck with Mark Ruffalo because of what's between his legs. She must be the greatest sex I've ever had, type of thing. And she realizes that there's more than that. And then with Gerard Carmichael, his character, hold on, what the hell is his name? Henry or something like that?
Something stupid.
Doesn't matter. That he is a cynic, and he teaches her that anything that you are experiencing in life is worth questioning. That it's not what it seems. That there's more to it. And then that part that they were in... what city that they were in that they dropped off on, and he gets to see the poor people.
Right, but the baby's dead. No, that's stupid.
And stuff. He tells her that, well, if it was switched, you know, if we were to go down there, they would kill us and rape us. And if, you know, we were switched, then we would do the same thing to them. And giving her, both of them giving what I would imagine to be small life lessons that she takes out for what it is. Without any experience, just at their word. And that's just her growth here, which again is bothersome because this girl doesn't experience shit this entire movie. She experiences one thing over and over. But at the most part, everything is just what she's being told. And again, more often by a man. So that's why it's just confusing to me when people are just like, that's always empowering. It's like, no, it's not. It's a naive girl going through life, being told what life is, her having some questions about it, and then being taken advantage of or exploited because of that.
Didn't that happen to us, though? I mean, from a different point of view, though, right? Because we went to, like, college, we were young, we were naive, and we learned by things that either, A, happened to us, or, B, things were told to us and molded us and defined who we are as men today, right?
Sure.
I mean, so that's what this movie clearly is doing.
And maybe that's the dark humor that I'm missing. I've said that I've always been one to miss dark humor. Or that it's just been not for me. I like a good slapstick. I like a good yuck. But for something like that to play off of a real situation or to play off of a social norm or a rule that you would play at the dinner table, like the dinner table scene with Mark Ruffalo and the two friends, how you're not supposed to talk about that. And she says these things without any filter. I'm sure some people would find that funny. I just found it to be kind of annoying. It's just lowbrow for me.
Very lowbrow, which they were talking about the man's private hood, and she goes, "His is a bit salty." And
it's, you mean, like, his penis? It's just
like, yeah, and it's like, oh god,
hilarious,
like just miserable jokes. And I bet everybody behind the camera thought that they were clever.
Yeah, again, it just didn't seem. I feel like this movie was made for that particular type of person.
Right. So I kind of back up a little bit, but I want to talk about Willem Dafoe. So me being my age, my first Willem Dafoe experience was Green Goblin, of course, right?
Really?
Right. Well, because that was 2001, 2002. I was a freshman in high school, sophomore in high school. I just started to get really into film because I was old enough now, to my parents' point of view, where I can explore other films. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure, sure.
So I don't know who Willem Dafoe was in 2001. He was this old man playing Green Goblin at the time, to me, right? But then I was able to watch Deer Hunter. No, not Deer Hunter. He wasn't in that. Yeah, he was. No, Platoon. No.
Platoon. Yep.
Sorry. I was able to see Platoon, and I was starting to see his other Boondock Saints, you know, like people, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
Speed 2.
He was the bad guy in Speed 2. So, why is he in this movie? B, do you think that, again, the director and the people behind the camera thought it was hilarious when he did his gastrical burp? Because they really did that a few times. So I guess answer first question first. Like, why did he do this role? I mean, he's a respected actor. Like, does he just...
Yeah, why? But he does a lot of... kind of these oddball films. Like, he does a lot of Wes Anderson. He did The Lighthouse as well, too. Like, he did Antichrist, right?
The Lighthouse is a great film. Now, that's an artist film right there, right?
Yeah.
But it's just, okay, so what's with the gastric bubble thing? So, he actually explains it. So, when he eats...
He also did The Great Wall with Matt Damon. I mean, we all know
that he masterpiece. He has to connect this tube to his stomach when he eats, because when he digests, what did he say? Something about, like, he digests his food and he needs to release it so this thing helps him? I don't understand this whole bubble stuff. Can you explain this to me? Do you know what's going on?
Nope. I think you just hit it right there.
Okay. Because he said something about his dad tore up his insides, which this movie's dirty, so that made me think of bad things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what does that mean? and every time he eats, he has to burp this big bubble full of putrid gas out of his mouth because of it. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Like, and why go this route?
Yeah. And there's this maybe at a part two when I was crossing my arms and, like, looking every 5-10 minutes to see how much more of this movie I had to go through.
Well, okay, so the reason why Eric, I'm kind of like on this bubble thing is just because, I mean, like, if I directed this movie, I would have just had him look the way he looked and just been done with it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he already looks horrid and ghastly because of all the scars on his face. We don't need to add more, right? I mean, like, every Bond villain has one thing wrong with him. This guy is like all the Bond villains wrapped in one. You know what I mean? Like, why have all of these different quirks on one character? It took me out of the movie when he was on screen. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. I'm looking up right now, too, just to see if there's anything. It's just about what you just said. And again, I don't understand why people are saying that it is, it was hilarious and gorgeous that this part is just like, really? Come on.
This part's hilarious and gorgeous with the belching of the bubble?
Really? Again, a lot of these people were, I don't know if there was some Kool-Aid that went around and we just happened to not drink that part of it. I just don't understand.
Okay, how about this? So let's segue for a second, because I thought about this today. Is there, in your personal opinion, an artistic jerk-off movie that you think is wonderful that's kind of in this wheelhouse?
that where what there where I think it's, okay. I think it's amazing that other people would disagree with it.
How about this? I will give you my answer, and maybe this can maybe can spitball off of this one. I love American Psycho. Okay.
Okay.
A lot of people that I know, and especially online, don't like that movie. It's now a pop cult. It's now a cult classic, but at the time when it came out, it bombed. It wasn't great. People didn't understand it. It was a satire, a dark comedy. People didn't get the movie. They didn't like it. When I first saw that in college, I thought it was wonderful. Donnie Darko was another thing in that category. Right?
Yeah.
So, is there a movie that for you that's kind of like your American Psycho or like a Donnie Darko that you get that nobody else gets? Because I'm trying – the reason I'm asking these questions is because I'm trying to put my mind into everybody else.
Sure, you know? Sure. I guess I'd have to take a look at some movies, but I don't know. Maybe The Fountain?
You do love The Fountain. You do love – yeah, that movie sucks.
Yeah, sure.
You do love that movie.
But here's the thing is that I'm not going to go out and say that it's the greatest all movie of the decade of the year or whatever. I just enjoyed it because I think it spoke to me. I understand it, you know, where what it was trying to do, what it delivered on. Sure, I get it. But I could also admit, and artistically it was beautiful, but I could also admit that it's not for everybody. I did enjoy it.
Is that ultimately your problem with this movie, right? It's because the story is very bland, very one note, and yes, like the art direction is great, but the acting is really bad. I mean, is it just because everybody else is saying this movie's great and it's the movie of a generation or a decade, I'm sorry, and you and I are just these old guys that are going, no?
I think people just, like the movies that you had just said, I think people, there's a certain group that maybe is just now more vocal than most that just like weird movies. Just plain and simple, they just like a weird movie that maybe doesn't have to make a whole lot of sense, that maybe is just strange in every part of it, and is making a commentary that this is, we can make a movie like this and it still works. This guy has made a lot of other movies like this. The Favorite is very much like that. The Killing of the Sacred Deer is very much like that. The Lobster is very much like that. I hate to say that I've seen a lot of these movies. This guy is just a weird director. If just flat out. And that's fine. If you people like this sort of thing, then you know, I'm not going to gatekeep you and say that you're horrible people for enjoying it. You like what you like, of course. I prefer, I don't know, a movie with a bit more, something that would just keep my attention, something that would just tell a story a bit more. And I feel like this was just weird, just for to be the sake of weird, and just to its main goal wasn't to tell a story. Its main goal was just to be quirky.
I think this is the foundation of our show, because I disagree with you on this. I don't see that. I see a director and an auteur and their own opinion.
Keep on saying that, yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, they feel that they're making something great. I really do feel that when I watch this movie. I really feel like this director, this auteur, and all these people.
I think we're saying the same thing differently.
We are. I mean, like, I don't think there's – I really think that they feel that they are making something that has deep cuts and is trying to tell a story and trying to talk about femininity and womanhood. I really feel that they think they're making something clever. I really, truly do. And that's what makes me mad, right? That's why – I'm going to give this a horrible review total, because I think that they think that they're clever. You know what I mean?
Okay. So the same thing I felt about Parasite, that Korean movie.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was a good review back. Check it in our archives.
Yeah. Check it in our archives, where it was just getting so much like, oh my God, it's the master. Just like, what? This movie's been done before. So it's been done by the same director. He did Snowpiercer, and it's not to tell a story about class inequality is not something new, where the haves and the have-nots observe each other through different lenses, and the have-nots are trying to do something to get what they need from the haves. It's not. There's a creepy part in that one movie, and that's it. And people tried to say, oh, it's an amazing thing. No, the only thing that maybe stood out in that movie was some camera work. That's about it. Same with this movie. I think the only thing that stands out in this movie, in Poor Things, is the art, which I will have to completely agree was visually beautiful. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. But sure. The other part of it was a lot of that camera work where it was... A lot of those zoom-ins were very Wes Anderson. A lot of those follow shots, the same part of it too. Those wall eyes where it was just a wide angle, or some of them would look like it was like through like a peephole in a door. And it didn't seem like it was for any reason other than just to be, I don't know, voyeuristic, right? Just to kind
of... It's very heavilized. I think, by the way, too, if you listen to our archives, I think I was accused of being a racist on the very side episode. Because I just
had that episode.
The reason why you say voyeur kind of struck a nerve with me too. Nerve meaning that I really feel that this is a dirty movie. What I mean by that is dirty. You know what I mean? Like this is definitely the director wants us to be a voyeur.
Sure.
You know, the director wants us to watch. It wants us to ogle over her. I mean, those masturbation scenes, dude, was so uncomfortable.
Like other quirky types of movies like this, like what are some other ones? I'm trying, because I've really been trying to think in my head.
Well, you should get Garden State was a good one.
Yeah, Garden State. Okay, how about like Being John Malkovich?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I still feel like there was a story in there.
Yeah, there's no story in this one.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I hate that movie.
Sure. See, there's another one. Okay, so maybe not Fountain so much as maybe Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I think I enjoyed that. And again, Mark Ruffalo, by the way, who's in that movie, playing a weird character. Or we can go with every David Lynch movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this slew of movies in the mid-2000s where I think this movie's trying to get at, right? Where he had Eternal Sunshine, he had was it Primer, I believe, and
sure.
Then you also had Life Aquatic.
Yeah, but that's Wes Anderson. He's just could you put Napoleon Dynamite in this kind of this weird kind of quirky but popular movie where some people hated it, some people loved it.
Yeah, because I'm definitely one of the fans that love that one. Not love it. I like it. I enjoy it.
I think that movie's a lot more memorable than this.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, like, you and I are probably not going to forget this movie. I mean, to be quite honest with you, this movie probably did one thing right, and it did its job, and we're not going to forget about it.
Right.
I mean,
not in a good way. I'm going to remember the movie Irreversible, not for good reasons.
Valid point. But... I don't know, like maybe since we are millennials and the Gen Zers are behind us, that maybe this is their Napoleon. I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. Like,
you're right.
Maybe it's something that we're just not seeing.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the rest of the movie because nothing really else happens, right? Because it's all about sex again, right? They freaking get dropped off and she becomes a prostitute.
She gets dropped off. Mark Ruffalo becomes distraught because she took all of his money and gave it away. And he's now broken. He's a broken man. Ah, I'm a broken man. Look what you've done to me. Which is him for the rest of the movie.
Right.
And then
he keep his money in a bank?
She works at a brothel.
Right.
To try to get more money, and she realizes that maybe I can learn more at this brothel and try to change the way that the structure is done at this brothel and try to change this you know, using her life skills that she's learned up to this point into a brothel to try to change the norms of a brothel for some reason, and say, oh well, maybe I can get to know the patron a bit more so that we can make intimacy more enjoyable for both of us. And then the madam comes in just like, hey, sometimes the guy wants to inflict pain on you.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like, is this, what the hell? There are so many times in this movie where I was just like, what the hell is going on here?
And, did I blink? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
because it go on, because it's a payback off you. Did I blink? Because Willem Dafoe was like, hey, Emma Stone's not coming back. So let's create Igor. Let's create another one. And wasn't there a scene of them like taking this girl to a park and she flips out and I never seen this reanimated corpse again? Did I blink and miss her?
No, she like, was – that's – what's her – Qually – Margot Qually or whatever his name is?
She was another one that, you know, and I was like, where did she – did I – because I did go up to go pee at one point.
Yeah, it was
– like,
was
what happened to her?
She was just another one that they made.
Did she stay at the house? Did she run away too? Like, what was her end
story? No, she was there. She was there at the end.
Okay, must have blinked.
She was just hanging out. She was just there. She's just another project, another poor thing. Even though I think "poor things" is the title given to the people watching this movie.
Nice. Okay, like, what is it though? Because I'm
she's
not
another
trying.
Experiment. She
no,
she,
not that.
Oh,
I'm saying overall because I don't want to repeat ourselves, but like. Because I don't want to give her proper ratings just yet, but
she comes back home because she gets a notification from Max, her betrothed, that God is dying.
Igor's dying.
So she goes, all right, well, I'm done being a whore, and I'm going to go back to London now because I'm empowered. So, what?
No repercussions, no transmitted diseases, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, ends up taking one of the girls with her, by the way, too, in the end. Either way, so she goes back to London, and she goes to marry Max, and mm-hmm. she's just like, you don't mind that I was a prostitute? No, your body is using... You know, he's such a woke guy, obviously.
Nice, just, yeah, your body's yours, yeah.
Yeah, kind of a thing. Whatever.
Is that an abortion joke? Is that what they're trying to do? Yeah.
No.
Your body's yours. Do what you want.
That may be what it is. Or it could just be that this guy's such a simp just to sleep with this girl. Anyway, he goes to marry her, but Mark Ruffalo's character, Duncan, right, is, this devil woman, she must pay. He gets her original husband. He remembers the name that they called her, which was like Victoria Blessington.
And, okay, then I blocked this out, dude. Okay.
And so at the wedding, he comes in with the original husband, General Alfie Blessington, and says, we are still married, and you shall go with me. And Bella's just like, okay. At the altar. Wow,
yeah.
What a power move there.
Femininity at its best.
Yeah, and so she blindly goes to this guy, leaves her dying god, by the way, too. The whole reason why she came back was because he was dying. And now she's like, I'm going to go with this guy. I'm going to go with New Dick now.
Nice. That's a good word. Good one.
She does this twice in front of both these people, where she's just like, I've never slept with these guys before, and you guys are giving me this whole promised life. Oh, no. She was going to be imprisoned there. Well, then why did she move back? Why she...
Right. So Igor, again, is a simp, right? I mean, like, this guy twice has been done. She clearly has said what her actions are going to be, and he's just like, I'll sit here and wait.
Yeah, she basically, when she's just like, hey, when my libido dies down from getting banged by all these other guys, then I'll come back and I'll marry you.
Right. And he's just going to sit there and just take it like she does. Nice. Anyway.
She goes off with him to wherever the hell he's from and realizes that he's basically a sadist, right? He's just some... I don't know, weird general guy who likes inflicting pain and making everyone uncomfortable, always has a gun to the help's face, and
it basically disagrees there.
Yeah, and she realizes that she can't make her own decisions and that she's imprisoned here, And
this is why the OG Emma Stone character killed herself.
Yeah, exactly. That's the reason why the whole, because of how unsatisfied and how tortured she was living there. And mm-hmm. when eventually she finds that he is going to mutilate her genitals, right? Do the the hood surgery.
The castration, yeah.
Yeah, and then force her to have a baby.
Because, you know, she can force herself on men to do her bidding, but when a man, you know, there you go.
And so
there you go.
He has a sedative. He's going to give it to her. She says no, throws it in his face. He shoots himself in his foot. She drags him back to God. It has Max do the surgery to save him. While on the table, she does the surgery to what replaces his brain with a goat. No consequence, by the way. This guy's a general.
Yeah, man bashing, right? That's what femininity is.
I don't even. Yeah.
No, I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
No, like, I get you.
I was kind of saving this for the end, but like this is what really pissed me off, because she's going out being loose and just doing whatever the heck she want to do, and she is a strong woman for doing so. But then once, who is just as sick? I'm not going to say this guy's like, you know, like the general's like this nice guy, right? I'm not defending the jerk, right? But like, as soon as he does something that's controlling, he's a bad man. And his brain must be switched with a goat, because all men should be punished because we hate men.
Yeah.
That's how I took this movie. I'm dead serious.
Sure. The entire time, I agree that, but it was just one of those where everything went, oh, she can do whatever she wants. She's like, no, she can't. Everything that she chose to do, again, was either decided for or in the company of another person. Again, mostly a man throughout this entire thing. The entire movie. It's as a feminist movie as, this is like if Veruca Salt, what's the name? Exactly. Yeah. Just was like, got a lobotomy and just went around with just like, oh, I want it now. I want it. Give me this. I want this now. I can take this. I'll take it now. Oh, I'll do this. Juice. I'll do it now.
Do me a favor, because you're really fast on the computer. Can you look up if the women from Thelma Louise won an Oscar?
Individually?
Well, I mean, just for the movie Thelma Louise. Because this is my point. Because we reviewed it this year, and it's fresh in my mind still. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, I don't care if the movie was nominated. I want to know if the women won anything.
Nominated. No. Women were nominated for Best Leading Actress, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon. The movie won for Best Writing Screenplay.
Gotcha. So Thelma Louise is fresh in her mind. Check it out in our archives from our buddy series, ironically. But that is a very, very strong, empowering female story, I would feel. And it told a good story. And where I'm going with this is you have two actresses that are really, really good in the movie who didn't even win. And Emma Stone showed the chest and won. Femininity at its finest, folks.
Yeah, again, she was playing a character, albeit a dumb character.
No. She ain't playing a character. Like, I mean, come on, dude. Seriously, like, she wasn't playing a character. This was her Oscar moment, right? This was her Revenant as Leo, right? This was something that was given to her. This was a
She already won a damn Oscar.
Right, but now she's showing the goods, right? Come on. Like, it's stupid. Like, it makes me so, I mean, like, you're more professional than I am when it comes to the Academy. You know, it's just like, come on. Like, I mean, Susan Sarandon, Gina Davis didn't even win. And those women are great in that film.
Yeah. Let's see, who is she up against here? Emma Stone for Poor Things. Annette Bening for Naiad, is that what it is? Carrie Mulligan for Maestro. Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, who should have won. Mm-hmm. And Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. So, okay, maybe it was a weak year.
No, it was, the Killers of the Flower Moon chick was nominated?
for best performance for a leading role. And she was favored too, because I think she won the Golden Globe for it.
She was amazing in that movie. That's a very good female empowering role.
Yeah, also a very pretty and artistic movie as well.
Right, and doesn't have stupid scene. I think we have ran this into the ground. So, like, we don't like this movie. I'll make it short and sweet. I asked you off air if you're going to give it a bag of kernels. You said no, and you'll explain your reasons why. I'm not going to give it a bag of kernels either. This isn't Meg 2. This isn't Fast X. This isn't Halloween Ends. There is some redeemable part when it comes to some of the filmmaking of it. So there's that. But it's overshadowed by the auteur, right? And I keep on saying that to be disrespectful. Like, I find it very annoying. I find it very pretentious. I find the story boring. I find it contradicting. And I will remember this movie, but out of hatred. Like, it's too long, way too long. And I wish the movie was something that it's not. So I disagree with everybody online. This is a no bag. Emma Stone should not have won Actress of the Year. Killers of the Flower Moon should have won it. This movie's terrible. Just terrible. Hey, if you want to relive the 90s and watch Skinamax, this movie's for you. Eric, what is your popcorn rating for Poor Things?
I agree, absolutely. And by the way, everyone, if you disagree, go to our Instagram and tell us what we're doing wrong here and what we missed on that. Absolutely, because that's where we're at. Or create a little subreddit. Go ahead and do that too. But I give this a no bag. This movie was not for me. I was not entertained by a lot of it. Again, I can understand maybe why people enjoyed this movie. The art production was fantastic. The costumes were amazing. I get that too. I don't know how Bella was able to take all of her clothes and move them anywhere. She just had a briefcase, I guess, but whatever the hell. It looked like only two of her outfits could fit in that damn thing.
Sure.
Sure. And none of it really was anything more than just what I've said it before already in this review, that this was a movie that is trying to be something, and it was just a miss for me. If you enjoyed this movie, that's fine, but I hated this movie. I really did. 2.5 hours? No, thank you. I can't see excuse me, myself ever watching this movie again. I don't even know who I recommend this movie to, because I don't know who this movie's for. I absolutely don't. I can think of many other movies to analyze in depth before this movie. I think we've actually mentioned a few already here on this podcast. I think that maybe it won just because of, just like you said, the Academy was just seeing her furiously jump those people, and they're just like, oh yeah, a bunch of old men were just like, yeah, oh yeah, she'll get the award for that type of thing. And it's just, again, it's just not for me. I really hated this movie. There were so many parts in this movie where I felt like I was watching Fast and Furious sometimes, just because the way I would react, be like, what the hell is going on? There's no way they're gonna do this. Oh my god, they did this. And that's how I watch Fast and Furious, where it's just, I paused this movie many times just to go, I don't know, outside and just stare at the sun for a minute. It was just,
just to stare at the sun. That's pretty.
It
bad.
Really is. Listen, again, there are redeemable parts in this movie. Mark Ruffalo and Emma Stone have obviously great chemistry, and they acted very well. I'm not a fan of Mark Ruffalo. I've said this many times before. I think that he's turned into like the Owen Wilson, where he plays a very Mark Ruffalo character. Same with Owen Wilson. He's a very Owen Wilson type of character.
Oh, wow.
That's basically, yeah, wow. And that's what they can do. So yeah, it's a no bag. I would skip this movie altogether. I would feel that, just like you said, in a few years, everyone's going to forget about this movie, just like they did La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to move on to the next one. I don't think Emma Stone really has that movie that has popped for her to make her really, maybe, yeah, maybe Easy A. I think she's doing these a lot of these obscure kind of movies that do well for the time, but maybe not in, I don't know, The Help, maybe?
Yeah, but that was like 10 years ago. Like, do you remember?
Yeah, and I think Octavia Spencer probably did a better job. I think Cruella is doing a better job for Emma Stone.
I liked her in Cruella.
So did I.
Yeah, you and I gave that a decent, we didn't give it a large bag, but we gave it a good review. Okay, how about this? My end note is, do you remember going way back when I started to turn on the Academy? You remember the Oscars in 2009 when The Artist won Best Film?
Yeah, I remember that.
And for those of you that don't know, The Artist is a black and white movie where
it's
they don't talk.
It's a silent film, yeah.
It's a silent film, and at the end they say one word or something like that. And that won Film of the Year, and I was so mad. It was my senior year of college. I was like, seriously? Like, all I had to do to win Film of the Year was make a silent picture? I'm doing that now. You know what I mean? Like, in college. You know, like, I was just, oh, I was so pissed. Right? So that's what
I think that's a big challenge, though, right? Like, that as a director, if you could tell a story without any dialogue in it, that's a challenge. I thought the same thing for Triplets of Belleville. I remember that animated cartoon movie. That's an entire movie where they don't say anything, and yet they tell a complete story front to back. In this movie, there's a lot of every dialogue whatsoever, and I still don't know what the hell kind of story they're trying to tell in this movie. I really don't. It's confusing. And sure, if that's part of it, where it's supposed to be the dialogue creator, it's supposed to be have you question. Okay, I sure, but that's pretentious. That's again, I don't think that's what it's supposed to do. This movie's not that deep enough.
No. Do you remember a few Oscars ago when you and I were doing our show and we were getting a little excited when Mad Max was winning everything? And we're like, oh my God, is this actually going to do it? Like, I remember that Oscars. That was a big one.
Yeah, I really have lost a lot of faith in the Academy.
Yeah.
It's one of those where I wonder how I can be a part of the, what, I need to write an article, right? Or something like that. But it's like, who's voting for this crap? Who's getting to select what gets in and what goes out? Because there were more deserving actors, more deserving movies that should have won. But instead, we get Emma Stone and Oppenheimer taking flipping everything in this damn year.
And, oh, that's right. Oppenheimer won, didn't
and, yeah, and people wonder why are people watching the awards anymore? It's because you're picking crap here. You everything that I'm supposed to watch is supposed to be damn near 3 hours long. No, man. Like,
I enjoyed the holdovers.
I thought the holdovers was way more deserving.
Yeah, we liked that movie. That was a good one. I think we both give that a large. We enjoyed that movie.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer was just boring, but we hope this episode wasn't boring. We don't want to rant because we can do that. Guys, ultimately, in a nutshell, if you want to see the movie, go ahead, I guess. It's on Hulu.
You're not missing a damn thing if you don't.
Again, if you want to relive the 90s, just watch Skinamax, guys. Like, that's literally what this is. And this isn't like that Gusa, like Basic Instinct or stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, this is just weird, uncomfortable nonsense. This is her whole character arc is the bedroom life. Like, that's what it is. It's not a good movie. It's really stupid. The direction is stupid. But that's our review of it. But make sure to check us out on Movie Guys.
Oh, there's a lot of dick in the movie, too. Did we talk about that? Be forewarned, everyone.
If you feel uncomfortable with full frontal male,
a lot of soft penis in this movie.
Yes, if you feel uncomfortable during the shower scene of Starship Troopers, then don't watch this movie.
Yeah.
There we go. But check us out at Movie Guys Podcast at poppy.com or wherever you get your podcast from on an app, because we know you're listening to that stuff going to our site. Download that. And we'll be back next Thursday for another awesome episode. Thank you so much for Eric for joining me. Have a good night. Was like Elvis the pelvis back in the day when this video came out. Like, women in lingerie. Like, people were... He got banned on MTV.
Oh, man.
Because he was talking about having monogamy, and this was during the AIDS epidemic, you know, like that kind of thing. I'm just like, really? People were so pissed about a woman walking around in lingerie. All right.
I don't know about that. I remember them playing Freedom by George Michael constantly.
I don't let you down.
Freedom. Yeah. I would think that of all the music videos, I don't know. What's a good Chris Isaak's Wicked Game? That was a kind of a sexual awakening for me right there.
You like, both there, bud.
Yeah, just like, well, I don't know how they're allowing this on TV, but I'm going to keep on watching.
And then don't you wish that you still lived that life? Don't you wish that? Like you or your wife just frolicking on the beach half naked, her holding the girls up with her arms like that, just frolicking. Never will happen in real life. Sand gets in every crevice.
Oh, yeah, sand ruins a good time for sure.
Jesus, this is why we're friends.
Oh jeez, yeah, you know, but it's a memory that lasts a while, that's for sure, especially the 3 days after. You go, oh, there's more sand. There's I hate it
sand. I need my cream. And I'll be like, I don't know any videos that were like hardcore for me, like I mean, like Madonna had a couple right in the 90s, right?
Oh yeah, it was always
Express Madonna. Yourself, you know. I don't know if anything that was, you know, a lot of the 2000s little Johns were kind of risque, right?
At that point, I don't think it mattered anymore because all the music was all about dropping ass, shaking butt, subject matter was all basically just sexual. Whereas before, it used to be a bit more, I don't know, private, more encrypted into the song a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even Boys to Men, I'll Make Love to You, which is a sensual song about sharing an intimate moment with somebody, came under scrutiny just because people were like, oh, it's about sex.
Mm.
And yeah. It's, you know, then they'd go, you know, I can't believe that they would show that. Now here's Prince.
Now here's Prince with this man symbol guitar, which clearly means something else, obviously. Yes.
He's not a slave, Jordan.
He's not a slave. I know we're going to talk for a while. You want to talk four things?
Yeah, let's do that.